Welcome, everyone. I'm Christine Olson, the newest board member of the Young Association of Western Massachusetts. Just a couple of announcements as we get started. If you would like to receive email announcements about our monthly lecture series, please put your email on the list. We're happy to send announcements, and we only send one announcement a month, so you won't be bombarded by lots of things. We do rely on your donations to pay our bills. So please, if you didn't put something in the basket on the way in, please put something in the basket on the way out. Next on our schedule is February 3rd. Anita Green, senior analyst in our area, will be speaking on soul and psyche. There are flyers for this event, and we would very much appreciate you taking a flyer to post anywhere that you go, especially if you're in your hometown. That would be very helpful for us. It's our practice to meet after a lecture for a salon, which will happen today, and as usual, at the Mosaic Cafe on Masonic Street.
And Chuck walks over. Chuck feels like walking.
Great. Look for Chuck, and you can walk over and meet up afterwards for discussion. Erica, our speaker today, will be there, and other people as well. Finally, Erica is hosting a film discussion group at her home in Hadley. It will be from 4 to 5:30 on four different Sundays, starting the last Sunday in January. You're welcome to come to one or all four of the film discussion groups. We'll be watching parts of The Way of the Dream by Marie-Louise von Franz, which we've seen some of her films here already this year. In order to attend the film series, there will be a limited space, and I think 30 people put their names down on the email list. So Eric is going to organize a little bit of a schedule. So please, if you're on the email list, you'll receive an email from Erica about it, and with the details of how to RSVP. Okay? You want to say something more about that?
Yeah, a lot of people have given me their emails, but if you haven't and want to get an email, please put your name and email very carefully. And then I will send you an announcement about it. And then please, if you just RSVP, so I can have a sense of how many people will be with Sunday. Is that clear? Thanks. And then hopefully it'll all work out. Is that clear?
Watch for an email from Erica. And be sure to sign up if you haven't already. That's the extending the announcements. Carol Baudet will be introducing today's speaker, Erica Lorenz.
Hello. Erica Lorenz is president of the Jung Association of Western Mass. And the Jung Association, by the way, of course, sponsors these talks. They have been for 20 years. She is a training analyst with the C.D. Jung Institute of Boston. And she has sat on the training board, and she was curriculum coordinator. Since 1980, Erica has lectured and taught workshops throughout the U.S. and Canada. She began her career as a dance therapist and has practiced Jungian analysis for almost 40 years. It's hard to believe. It's wonderful. It's the erotic feminine soul that kept her so young. Really. She moved to Western Mass in 2010 which means that we're really very lucky to have such an experienced Jungian analyst right here practicing in Hadley. I was thinking of this word lucky, and particularly in the context of this disturbing political time. And I make a practice of, when I get up in the morning, to list to myself a few things I'm grateful for. This morning when I got up, what came to me was the following list. I'm grateful for Carl Jung, for the depth, breadth, imagination, I could go on, of this great man. I also feel gratitude for the Jung Association of Western Mass, which for 20 years has been presenting these lectures. I feel gratitude for the analysts who practice Jungian psychology, who words soul, erotic, these kind of words, these kind of topics are common parts of the human psyche, which we can discuss whatever the moral position of the dominant culture is at the time. Jung has held to these words and our understanding of them and our exploration of them. And again, to these therapists who do this work, such as Erica or Penny Terraser, hold this spiritual part of the human psyche, the human soul, as they do their work with you, all of us. I felt gratitude to this community, which I consider a Jung at heart community, which is the word from a former board member. And I have so much, and we have so much in common with each other, those of us who are here. And the last of all, I really have gratitude for Erica Lorenz for choosing such a deeply resonant topic to explore with us. Just say the words, you know. How often we get to say these words. Recovering the feminine erotic soul for all of us. I think I'll send that to the upcoming president, etc. I really think that's a part of it. Recovering the feminine erotic soul, S-O-U-L, in all of us. So, we're going to have 3 hours with Erica to drop deep into this topic. So, thank you, Erica. And that's that.
Carol is a manifestation of everything you just said. Okay. Welcome. Oh, forget if I put my papers in my way. I have a lot of material today, as usual. So, and we'll see how it comes out, because it always comes out differently every time. So, as I feel like we have lost an understanding, a connection with a feeling of both the masculine erotic soul and the feminine erotic soul. I think we are, as, who phrased this? I think Rachel Hillel phrased it as, we are orphans in this way. My mother certainly had no connection with her feminine erotic soul, and my father had little connection with his masculine erotic soul. So, but I think it is more easy to stand up here and talk about the generative phallus and the masculine soul and the masculine power and the masculine eros than it is to stand up here and talk about the vulva and the feminine erotic soul.
because it has been so maligned and dissociated and disparaged in our culture. So I'm going to take a stab at it. That's an interesting thing. Okay. So what I would like today is to watch, I have some amazing films, I have some amazing pictures, I have lots of material, and I would like us to really try to tune in to how we're reacting, how we're experiencing this material, because that's the important thing. If we can talk about this stuff, we can talk about all this Jungian stuff forever and be in our heads and not have any transformation happen. So you have to come down, you have to come into your experience. So I'm going to try to give you some things that will help you do that. Okay. So what I want to ask us today, because I don't like to just stand up here and go blah, 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 blah. I want us to all be thinking and playing with this together. What is the feminine erotic soul in men and women? Where is it? Where has it gone? And why do we need it? Okay. So my personal journey with this probably started in 1970, when I didn't get into the college of my choice. And I said to my parents, I'm either going to Haight-Ashbury, I'm going to Paris, you choose. And they said, oh, Paris. So off I went by myself to Paris, a very, very naive, young, vulnerable 18-year-old, and had quite many adventures, as you can imagine, and began to learn a little bit about the world and my feminine erotic soul and many other things. And then I was on an internship in Mexico in 1975, and once again, you know, I love New England, but we have a real problem with the feminine and the masculine erotic soul. So I find in other countries it's a little more easy to sort of feel into it. So I went to Mexico on an internship, and once again, I felt much closer to the feminine. Now, that doesn't mean there's a ton of misogyny. There's a ton of misogyny everywhere. But the colors and the music and the culture just has... Spanish itself is one of my favorite languages. It has a rhythm. It has language. I mean, it has music in it. So, and I remember one of the last things I bought in Mexico was a beautiful frilly blouse. And I came home and it went into the closet. And I went, what happened? So then I moved to Texas in 1980. And Texas, talk about misogyny, my God. But Texas, again, it has this beautiful culture of, it's very earthy, it's very primal. It has an amazing culture of Hispanic, Black, and the feminine there is very repressed in many ways, but it's also comes out in the colors and the jewelry and the sparkly. It's very sparkly. And I remember I was working on my own sexuality, of course, as we always do, and I was walking with a friend down the street in Houston, and she said, Erica, do you realize that men really look at you? And I went, no. Because it was, I didn't. And I started working on that and thinking about it, and then I realized it was okay. Finally, it was okay that I could be viewed as a woman, as a sexual woman, and I was okay, I was safe. I could be safe with that and just be in that space. So those are some of my early experiences with this. And I'm sure some of you have had experiences various ways. Now, I'm not talking about sex, per se. That's not the point. Sex is part of it, of course. What I'm talking about is, what is the feminine erotic soul? What do we feel? How do we experience in ourselves? It's not about another person. It's about ourselves. How do we open to it? Okay. So John Doerly wrote Jung and His Mystics. It's an amazingly dense book. It's wonderful. And he wrote, Jung's myth taxes humanity with the birth into consciousness of the archetypal powers of the Great Mother. That really was his mission. That really was his journey. How did he connect with the feminine? And there are many, many stories of that. A moment of dissolution in the Great Mother's world makes the birth of consciousness less painful and serves to guarantee the survival of the child and the species. That's a pretty powerful message. This is Jung. Sexuality is not mere instinctuality. It is an indispensable creative power that is not only the basic cause of our individual lives, but a very serious factor in our psychic life as well. I believe only in the word become flesh, as in the Bible, the word become flesh, incarnation, in the spirit-filled body. Jung says, with the honey of the senses and the joy of life, the healing and the whole-making medicine, which is recognized even by modern psychotherapy, is combined with the spiritual and conjugal love. The whole of conscious man is surrendered to the self, the new center of the personality. Feel free to have a dialogue with me, to ask questions, bring up points, because I don't like to just talk at you. I like us to have a dialogue. So. Okay. I'm going to go into some of the history of the goddess, but specifically focusing on the erotic and throughout history, and bring it up to the present. And then I'd like us to open it up. Who are our feminine erotic icons now? And where do they fall short? Where do they, you know, what is that about for us, all of us? Okay? But first, we're going to watch a movie. I'm going to try to get us into it a little bit. Thank you. And can you see it well enough? Uh-oh, did I open the blinds too much? Uh-oh, I guess we need to... Can somebody just quickly get the blinds? Sorry about that. I want more light in the room. Yeah. Oh, these lights. You're right. Okay, got it. Okay. What I want you to do with this is I want you to just be open to it. Just allow it to come in and see what happens inside of yourself.
Thank you.
Cirque du Soleil.
So let's not think about it. I want you to analyze it. Just what came up for you is qualities that this speaks to.
Crucifixion.
Okay.
Felt odd and also anxious.
You felt odd.
And anxious. And anxious.
Yeah. Okay. Anxious. Yeah.
Strength.
Mm.
Powerful.
Powerful.
Wild body.
Wild bodied.
Beauty.
Wild beauty.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Uninhibited.
Uninhibited.
Self-contained.
Self-contained.
Tragedy.
Tragedy.
Birth.
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 Vulnerability.
Fluid.
Fluid. Sensuous.
Yeah, I was just in awe of the.
Just in awe.
Yeah. Of the discipline of the beauty of the body. I was in Turkey and saw a whirling dervish, and it kind of reminded me of this kind of my conscious mind just left and was somewhere else viewing it.
Yeah, so it took you sort of into a subtle body place.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So we're talking about the sacred feminine erotic soul, right? Any other?
Extravagant.
Essential.
Potential death for the sake of art.
Potential death for the sake of art. Risk.
Mm. Yeah.
Erotic. Yeah. I heard
inspired.
One. Of, what?
Inspired.
Athletic.
Open.
Trained.
Okay. So what specifically in the feminine erotic soul? So we're talking about open, vulnerable. I mean, all these strong. It's not a weak thing at all. It's incredibly powerful, right? But there's a different quality than the masculine. There's a different quality here. Of course, she has masculine too. She wouldn't be able to do this if she didn't have that. But it's married with the feminine. Yes. Okay. Any other thoughts about that? Yeah.
Well, I felt like when she was up high, she was able to cover herself with the red and be protected, and then she's like peeking out, and she, the whole thing was a process of gradually coming down and touching the ground, and that there was a lot of pain in that for her.
Mm-hmm.
She was able to up high. And I just felt really moved.
And the three, I see them as the three priestesses who come and then take her and hold her and help her come back.
The choice of music was so strongly colored my experience.
Let me fall, let me go. It's the music. It's in French.
And the color is the red.
Colors, yeah. Mary Magdalene always wore red. Okay. All right. So let's go way, way, way back 100,000 years ago. 100,000 years ago, when the goddess was the most supreme power in the world. The males were consorts of the goddess. So the earliest stone statues, like here, from the Black Sea to the Adriatic and then Anatolia, Turkey, that area. They vary. This was it. This is the earliest one. $800,000. Yeah, probably is worth that. 800,000 years ago, 3,500 to 3,000 to 2,500, 35,000 to 25,000 BC. That's a very, very long time ago. And about 10,000 years ago, which is very recent history, is when the horse riding pastoral patriarchal tribes of the north came in and destroyed the clan kinship structure of the people, and were organizing as a social, that was the social principle, and back then the high priestess, and then she was the top ruler, and then the queen and the brother or uncle were the consorts, were the king and queen of the region. So let's go through some of these. So this is the most ancient. Then everybody recognize this one? Venus of Willendorf. This is 30 to 25,000 BC, 1,000 years ago. Anybody know who this is? Who made this? 1977. Mm-hmm. Judy Chicago. I never seen that from her before. This is from Malta. She's pregnant. This is 3600 to 2500 BC. This is Egyptian, the vulture goddess, 4200 to 3400. This is the Aztecs, Coatlicue. Fertility, life, death, rebirth. The mother of the gods, the skirt of snakes. The goddess is very connected to the snake. Whenever you see a snake, it's about the mother god, the great mother. This is from Sweden, the snake witch. This is 4 to 600 AD, Nigeria, and Ireland. This is the 11th century. You see, so what from these pictures What stands out to you? What is it speaking to?
Fertility.
Creation.
The
female body, yes. The vulva and the breasts. But the vulva, we're used to seeing breasts, but the vulva. The vulva is the yoni. It's the seed, it's growth, it's the creatrix. It's the creating from ourselves, not from somebody else. It's creating from ourselves. It talks to life's affirmation, desirousness and ecstatic passion. Erotic, sensual soul passions. It's an initiation into her sacred rites. So let's say we take a bath. We take a beautiful bath with candles and salts and warm water, and we just allow ourselves to be immersed in the bath. Rituals, it sends participants, as you were talking about, into the subtle body, into the sublime sacred, through the erotic sensual passion. The human body is the shrine itself. It's the holy container. Regeneration through sexuality, but not just through base sexuality, through the whole sexuality, tantric, subtle body. It's holy communion in these goddesses. Sexuality is not owned by humans. People offered themselves to the generative powers of the goddess to rekindle the sacred sparks of life. In an immature lover, love serves us. In a mature lover, we serve love. That's interesting to get your head around, or your heart around. We serve love.
Yeah.
I think that was actually Nancy Coles Corbett.
Would you repeat it?
In immature love, love serves us. In mature love, we serve love. These are three books that I recommend that are really beautiful and fairly simple. The Redemption of the Feminine Erotic Soul by Rachel Hillel. And Uncursing the Dark by Betty Meador. And then my supervisor for my training was Nancy Qualls Corbett, who wrote The Sacred Prostitute. These are a little more, this is a little more heady. This is really good. These two really get into the feeling of it a little bit more. So, a dream. A dream. It's amazing when you read dreams of things like this. The analyst always finds the perfect dream to illustrate something. Yeah, so this is a beautiful, perfect dream. This was a woman, a physician, strict Catholic upbringing. She dreamt. Four proselytizers approach her childhood home. Whoops, I'm sorry. That's the wrong one. This is another dream. I enter a cave. A dark but dim fire is in the corner. There's a female Paleolithic Venus. There's a rapid alteration. Please turn off your cell phones. There's a rapid alteration from black to white in this Venus goddess. I am naked. She paints my whole body with ritualistic symbols. I experience erotic sensations as she proceeds to paint all over. And as she worked on this dream, the black was an aspect of the sacred prostitute, and the white was the sacred priestess. So she had both these in this figure that she was trying to integrate and bring together. Okay. This is from India. So what is most vivid in these pictures? What aspect of the anatomy is most vivid? The breasts, and then
the vulva.
And the vulva is the outer as well as the inner part of the sexual parts. So, but here the vulva really stands out. It's as important as the breasts. If a religious attitude returns to the earth, the woman, all of us, will regain our self-respect, our instinctual ways, also the meaning of religion.
The way of our loving comes from our inner core. Our sexuality is love, is prayer, is spirituality. Okay. So that in Anatolia Plain and Egypt, the person who discovered and who unlocked the secret of these ancient goddess figures was Marija Gambutas. Anybody know Marija Gambutas? Okay, yeah, she's wonderful. And she was an archaeologist, and she was working in the States, and these figures were being unearthed, and she began to work on them. And the men were just talking very analytically about them. But she came from Lithuania, where she had a very deep connection within her culture of myth and the goddess and folklore and the mythology of the earth. And so as she was looking at these figures, she began to recognize elements that she had grown up with. And she was the one who said, no, this is the feminine, this is the goddess. These are goddess figures. These are the feminine erotic goddess figures of Paleolithic times. And she was right. People fought her for a long time, but she was absolutely right. There's a book of hers over there. So she has thousands of these little figures that were unearthed. And that was the goddess culture zenith was 5000 BC. It was old Europe. And then we move to the Middle East, the Inanna, Ishtar, all the Mesopotamian, Babylonian, Sumerian goddesses. And that's 3500 BC or before. Ishtar was in Sumeria, Inanna was in Mesopotamia. Are any of these names familiar? Mm-hmm. Okay, some of them are, some of them aren't. And these were very powerful goddesses in terms of the rituals. They were the priestesses in the city-states, in the regions. They were the highest spiritual power. And the first writer to 2300 BC was a priestess named Inhe-Duana, meaning Inanna, and she was the religious head in Sumer. And this is our first recorded poet. And she says, "You have gathered the holy essences tightly on your breasts. Like thunder, you roar over the earth. You are a flood descending from the mountain. Your fire blows about and drops on our nation. You are in all our great rites." And in Inanna's song, the Song of Inanna, "My vulva, the horn, the boat of heaven, is full of eagerness like the new moon. My untilled land lies fallow. Who will plow my vulva?" What do you think? What do you feel?
The first poem invokes a lot of destructive mm-hmm. images.
Mm-hmm. Or powerful images, like
flood and fire, and mm-hmm. yeah. These are would be typical, I would think, destructive mm-hmm. forces in mm-hmm. our culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's interesting because in the early mythologies, the gods and goddesses were not so separated out, like Aphrodite and Artemis, and all the Greek goddesses are just different parts of the psyche. But in the early mythologies, they are very complex. You take one god or goddess, and they involve both the destructive and the healing, both the sky and the earth and the underworld. So they're more related to the shamanic connection of that world.
I have to say, just for curiosity's sake, interesting. I saw beauty and fluidity, and it's so interesting how we perceive, you know, because I didn't see destruction at all. Mm-hmm. So I just have to say that. Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Inanna and Ishtar were called the harlots of heaven. Mm-hmm. The harlots of heaven. Harlot has changed its meaning. I when I gave this talk somewhere else, a woman said, "What do you mean it's changed its meaning? It's never changed its meaning. Words don't change their meaning." But it has. The harlots of heaven, of course that's a translation, but the harlots of heaven, meaning that this is the priestess. The priestess is the Hari, the spiritual ruler. And she is a prostitute of compassion. One principal personality of Ishtar, she was the Har, the mother of the harlots. The mother of the harlots. The priestess Kadeshi means not to be touched. And in Hebrew, Zona means harlot, and Mezon means food. Food. And Rachaim means compassion, and Rechem means uterus.
What does harlot mean?
It means the mother of harlots, Har, and, this is harlot. This
well,
is the harlot.
I'm wondering, what's a harlot? We're using the word harlot.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So, what is a harlot?
Well, I'm describing it, through these other etymological, compassion, uterus, sacred prostitute, Kadesha, and holiness, divinity. Hadish is a saint. So these are all the attributes of the sacred harlot. Herdoa in Greek means sacred priestess. Hieros is sacred. I-E-S is passion. In Hebrew, putza means harlot. Peretz means breakthrough. Hitperetz, an eruption, an excitement or outburst. In Latin, to venerate means reverent worship. Veneres means love and sexual desire. So these were the sacred prostitutes that Nancy Qualls Corbett talks about. They were the ones who invoked the goddess. They were the ones who created the rituals and the rites that took you into the sublime oneness with the goddess. And it was through sexuality, but it wasn't just mundane sexuality as we think of today. It was all in temples and in with sacred rites and with beauty and the importance of taking you to that place to renew your connection to the Great Mother, to renew your connection to the goddess. Any thoughts about that? Yeah.
Well, I'm lacking because I missed the first maybe 15 minutes,
mm-hmm.
so I don't really know what you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if sexuality was used as a reward at some time when we started having civilization and sacred prostitutes or harlots or goddesses, whether from remembering Gilgamesh a little bit, I had the thought that sometimes these temple prostitutes, the way it was talked about, was that sex was a reward for fighting or obeying. Is that true at all in any of the things that you think?
No, that wasn't the point. It wasn't a reward, no. Gilgamesh is actually a bit later myth than some of the stuff we're talking about. Okay, these are earlier myths. It was, remember, the sacred prostitute, the priestess, was the religious head of the state. Was the religion. She was it.
Once there was a state,
mm-hmm.
a state,
then things did begin to shift. You're right.
I mean, before the state, was just hormones and sexuality.
Wait. Hold on. Before the state, there was before the invasion of the patriarchal tribes.
Okay.
There was the goddess. That was the religion. It was very.
There were female images. There were things that were made, but we don't have any writing saying what these.
We do. That's what I was reading.
Well,
Carol.
Excuse me, but I've explored a lot of things, and I've done past life regression to that period of time, and it's an entirely different psychological state. It's nothing like what we know today, unless you get through it through Tantra or past life regression. But to really know it is to keep in mind that it's an entirely different psychological state.
And that's what I'm trying to help you sort of feel into a little bit. We can, you know, we have all our modern problems and our modern issues around this and what has been done
what has changed from the sacred harlot, the sacred prostitute who initiated us into the goddess, into the womb of the goddess, to renew ourselves and to find our own feminine power, whether a man or a woman, it doesn't matter.
That word renew, there is, to go into that state is healing.
Yes, it is.
We don't understand that. Well, some people do in the present. Tantra understands it. But renew is a very important word.
Let's go back to the beginning. Jung's myth taxes humanity with the birth into consciousness of the archetypal powers of the Great Mother. A moment of dissolution in her world. That's what we're talking about with the sacred rites of the sacred prostitutes. You know, I really want to use that word because it is really, it is the sacred that they were the religious leaders, okay? A moment of dissolution in her world makes the birth into consciousness less painful and serves to guarantee the survival of the child and the species. So, yes, this is a very different mindset than we have in modern life. Just look at some of these images. Okay? And how do we come back to this in a very healthy, holistic way? How do we renew our connection to the sacred energy of the earth, of the underworld, of the earth, of the flower, of the cosmos? You mentioned tantra yoga, tantra. This is Kali. In tantra came from shamanism. Actually, it's a very, very ancient root into shamanism. And tantra in Sanskrit means the fabric of the universe, which includes eroticism, sensuality, femininity, and the power of destruction. Kali renews and destroys. Shiva renews and destroys. It's a magical technique that exerts an influence on the world of polarity, of the masculine and feminine, brings us into unity. Enlightenment is a normal characteristic of our nervous system. We don't have to, as the meditation teachers keep telling us, we don't have to do anything. It's right here. That's the hardest thing to be, isn't it? Right here. And being right here in the present moment is to be with nature, totally with nature, to be totally with the earth, to be totally with out of time, out of chronos, linear time.
How long ago was Kali?
She's way back. I don't know exactly, but way, you know. She's in the beginning. She was the one who was called upon by Durga to help conquer the demons. Okay. Enlightenment is a normal characteristic for our nervous system. It's similar to an orgasm, enlightenment. Of course, it's not just an orgasm. It just keeps going and going and going. It's an orgasmic experience of light, diving into and becoming one with the primordial, the oceanic liberation of the self. It's a profound understanding of life and death, of the past, of the present, and the future. Have you ever had an experience of you sort of get into this wonderful subtle body state that we were sort of mentioning before, and into the subtle body space, and suddenly you just have a feel, you feel more able to sense what's going to happen in the future, or you know how to follow your own little instinctive way. You aren't so pulled by the culture and by what you should do and what you need to do and all that. That's what we're looking for, that moment when we're one in ourselves and we can just proceed as one in ourselves. And that's why when I was in Houston and I got to a place where it's okay if I'm a sexual woman and that's what people see, I'm safe. I'm one in myself. Okay. Durga or Kali travel in the body of the woman. And here, I think it's always interesting in tantric yoga, the different root chakras, the different chakras are talked about in different ways and different systems. But I like this, what they said here. The root chakra is where Shakti develops. Shakti is the female aspect, the female and the male union of the Kundalini. And she's the female. Only when we satisfy sexual desire and emotional need. That doesn't mean we go out to prostitutes. That doesn't mean we have all the sex we can want.
That means we come into our sexual connection with ourselves. Okay. Desire and emotional needs. Can we develop spiritual strength that can flow into the crown chakra? So you can't just go up and have energy in your crown chakra if you don't have the bottom, because you will probably go crazy. So you have to have the whole system. It has to work together. You have to have the grounding in order to have the up. You have to have the underworld in order to have heaven. That's something we totally miss. Remember that hell, the underworld did not become hell until the New Testament. It was just the underworld. It was where many, many gods and goddesses lived and where you went after death. And it wasn't a place of punishment. It was a place of being. It was just another experience, another level of experience. So, and the second chakra is the sexual genital, and it's the energy center of the human being, according to the shamanic view, where the nutrition is transformed into energy and where the organic system is detoxified. It's not interesting. The organic system is detoxified. The third chakra is the navel. It's the protective shield. It's that place where we feel like we can protect ourselves. The heart is where we build relationships. The throat is where shamans left their bodies and traveled, where they had out-of-body experiences. This is the Bun tradition in Tibet, which is related to Tibetan Buddhism. It gives energy and it brings us into resonance with the environment and energy to the intellect. The third eye is the relationship to the gods. It stores cosmic wisdom, and then the crown is the transpersonal cosmic energy. So just remember that if you don't have the ground chakra, I've had experiences when I've had energy move up, subtle body experiences which were so powerful, if I stood up too fast, I would fall over. You have to have the grounding, and then you can transmute and work with the whole system. Okay. So these were the sacred prostitutes that helped us get there through ritual, through touch, through sexuality, but it wasn't just going to a prostitute. There were in those cultures the sacred priestesses, maybe I'll use that word, it simplifies it a little bit, right? And then the profane prostitutes. And they were both part of the culture. But when you wanted to get in touch with the divine, you went to the sacred harlot. Okay. Yes.
Did women go as well as men?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think more that women at certain points in their life went to the temple and became they were part of the ritual. In the Dionysian ritual that I spoke of a couple of times ago. That's where the women went specifically with the Dionysians. So, yes, there were rituals, which I'll talk about a little bit, that were specifically for women themselves. Okay. Time for another movie. Okay. This is a silly little film, but the scene is just so lovely. It speaks to what we're talking about, the sacred prostitute, the sacred priestess. So once again, just try to
relax.
Oh dear, it does that thing. Okay. Just try to open up to this and see what comes up for you. Oh dear. Hello, mouse. Where are you, mouse?
I was all dancing and I found I really liked it. It made me happy.
It shows. I mean, I feel excited about something for the first time in such a long time. Are you?
Excited?
About tomorrow, the competition.
No. I'm petrified. I'm going to forget everything. I won't be able to put one foot in front of the other. I'll make a mess of the whole thing.
No.
I know. I'm just...
Give me 1 hour. Don't say anything, and don't think. Don't move unless you think.
Creative process and finding these TV clips that just sort of come along.
Which movie was that?
This is called Shall We Dance. It's a little movie about the transformation of Richard Gere, who's having a middle-age crisis, and this dancer who got left by her dance partner and is in a real bad place. And it's really sweet. It's a sweet movie. So, what did we feel there? What's going on here?
Yeah.
And I don't mean, your question is very important. It's like, how do we get into this material beyond our, you know, what has happened, right? How do we move into that?
Yes, when she said, leave the lights, don't talk, don't move unless you feel it.
Yeah.
That was so lovely.
Yeah. Laura.
Well, I really... So that process of initiation with him, where they were two, and she initiated him into this unity within himself,
mm-hmm.
that became the unity between them.
Yeah. Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a beautiful way of putting it. Yeah. Was there healing for both of them? What else?
One thing that I find, especially with tangos, is that when the woman submits, but in submitting also obtains a power mm-hmm. through the submission.
Mm-hmm. And there's a submission for the man, too, right? That he has to submit to his own instinct.
Yes.
And when they both submit to their own instinct and their own sensuality, they can move as one.
Absolutely,
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tango is lovely that way because the power moves back and forth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There are moments when he leads and moments when she leads, and it's a real dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It was sexual without being sexual. You know,
yes.
It was more in this other zone.
Uh-huh.
I guess you'd call it sensuous. I don't know. But you know, in our culture, it's either one, or once you're sexual, then it means a certain thing.
Right.
It was in a whole other realm.
Yes, and that's what we're trying to hone in on, this other realm. It doesn't mean, go ahead.
For me, it was a sense of whole body connection with themselves mm-hmm. and then merged together.
Yes. What do people feel?
More alive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I always get teary when I see this. It just makes me want to cry. Mm-hmm.
Don't you get aroused? Do
me?
You get aroused?
It's a different than like sexual. Like I
want
to go to bed
with somebody.
Well,
I didn't just mean physical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's more like I there's an arousal mm-hmm. of sort of a subtle body place with the emotional. You know, it's just a mix, a beautiful mix of sensuality. I think. Which is, I mean, if we don't have the central aspect, then sexuality is kind of dead, isn't it? We can have sex, but who cares? Yeah. Any other thoughts? Yeah, sure.
Well, I think that tango also plays with death.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And that it's very, very exciting in the dance to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a sublimated violence.
Yeah.
By what?
Yeah.
It's also a sublimation of violence in the sense as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You see all these different energies in it, don't you? The sensuous, the power, the competition, the drive, the all of it. Yeah. Which is what the goddess has. All of it. Yeah. Then.
Well. When you were saying about, like, we raise these energies and we often think, oh, this means that. Mm-hmm. Meaning, oh, this means they must now be a couple.
Right.
And that we literalize the forms and mm-hmm. how that prevents all the other ways in which this energy could go mm-hmm. into so many other kinds of
things. Absolutely.
So there's a whole, like, oh, well, I don't want to do that, so then I can't do this. Mm-hmm. Like, it stops the whole chain of the energy flows. And the other thing is that, okay, he's a man and she's a woman, but if they're switching roles,
mm-hmm.
they're switching genders moment to moment.
Exactly.
So that's also not literalized what
right.
gender you're in.
Yeah.
And I loved at the end that the sense of there's something about the energy coming up and then she was looking down, so the up and down energy was evoked. But the fact that you can go back and forth means that you're participating in the middle, and now the middle is strong.
Yeah.
And now the existing
it holds the center.
Holds the center. But you have to do that by being able to cross it.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, it exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here's the initiation. Here's the ritual. Here's the rite. Mm-hmm. And, and we can find it in many places in our culture. Dance. Anybody else have some thoughts? Yeah.
Well, this was a scene written, directed, paid for to show us this.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that our culture, religion, most importantly, has repressed sexuality.
Absolutely.
So we have to watch it.
Yeah.
We have to find it somewhere. That's
right.
Why porn is so great on the internet, because in order to work and wear a tie and get dressed and
mm-hmm.
do what they want us to do, we have to repress everything.
Right.
So repression comes from a strong culture. To build the monuments, we have these goddesses, they had to repress people. That's why I think, and I'm just beginning my research on this, that temple prostitutes were, in a sense, a reward. This is from my reading and interpreting old writings. So I'm saying older cultures that were not we're not controlled to make empire.
Right.
Sexuality is natural. You don't think about it. You're not even aware of it. You are unconscious of it. Mm-hmm. You are unconsciously satisfied. Mm-hmm. Native Americans, I just read, never raped the white people. There was no mm-hmm. case of rape mm-hmm. of Native Americans against the colonials. Mm-hmm. Yet, sexuality is natural. It's completely... I'm just saying, mm-hmm. I've experienced completely unconscious. Your
right.
body doing something where
okay.
completely unconscious. So
good.
All of this that we're talking about actually comes from repression or control. So that's why we need all this. That's why we have to learn about it or unlock it or
yeah, that's why
trained.
That's why Jung was wanted to bring it to for us to connect with it. Absolutely, because he wants us to go beyond the patriarchy, and we don't really want to go back to the matriarchy either, right? We want a sacred marriage. We want a sacred marriage, right? But we want a sacred marriage. Well, wait. This isn't about gender. This is about the masculine and feminine energy in the universe and our lives and what we do with both of those, right? So we're looking at the feminine aspect because that has been much more repressed, I think, from but we want the sacred marriage. We want the hieros gamos. That's what we're reaching for. But we have to reconnect with the energy in order to get there. So let me go on a little bit, okay? Yes, this is very important how it's gotten, but I don't want to just focus
just
on that.
Thing. You said sacred marriage. I'm saying sacred community. There was community first. There was tribe. There
right.
was clan.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
So in sacred marriage, now with everything controlled in our lives, we have to come up with all of
well,
this.
Well, that's what we're doing, right? Yeah.
But
we don't have to come
I'm
up with it.
I'm saying if I omit being in this culture, I don't have to do all that. I already have it.
Okay. Yes, Charles.
May I get back to this?
Sure, get back to this.
I'm really drawn to his expression
uh-huh.
right here.
Yeah.
My relating to that is that he said, "What the hell just happened?"
What the hell? Wow, where was I?
What just happened? and totally flabbergasted with this loving, wonderful web was weaved around him
uh-huh.
and just carried him across the floor. I think, she was from my experience, she was in total control. She initiated it, she ended it with love. Now, I don't mean control in an aggressive way, but
mm-hmm.
just like a web, a beautiful, mm-hmm. loving web.
They were both in the web, weren't they?
Yes.
And they both, she got him in touch with the web, and then they could move within the web of life.
Good point.
Yeah. So that's the sacred marriage, really, when the web is there and we're in it, right?
What's interesting, the first film you showed, she was entwined.
Uh-huh.
Her whole dance was in this entwining, in this
uh-huh.
relationship that she had. And then all of the different figures you show are actually shown as entwined figures.
Mm-hmm.
And then this entwining of a dance
yeah.
seems like
yeah.
it carries a symbol of something.
Yeah. Okay, so good. So we have the ancient goddesses, and then of course the patriarchal comes in. So in the Greek, there's one of the early, and this is pre-Greek, but I have the information from the Greek culture. There's the Thesmorphia, and this happened in all cultures, I'm sure. I haven't been able to research all cultures in the world; it would take a lifetime. This is before Zeus, and we have votive remains of this, so we know this happened. It's about 6,000 BC. And what it had to do with was the women going and fertilizing the fields, which they did every spring. And it was only women. This is a woman's ritual. And there were 3 days of preparation, the purification, the separation from the community that they were in, and drinking of the herb that would help them menstruate together. So if you're in a community, most women are menstruating together anyway. So they come together in the fields, and the men are not allowed. In fact, if they enter, they will be perhaps killed. I mean, that's how powerful this was. You did not go. Day one, there was a sacrifice to the snake deity. The snake deity is the mother goddess in an underground chasm. And Erishkigal, who is the goddess of the underworld, becomes the snake. She's the snake. And in day two, there's a silence and fasting, and they eat pomegranate seeds. Demeter and Persephone. Demeter was the mother goddess, and Persephone, her daughter, was abducted by Hades, the underworld god, and became the goddess of the underworld. But in order for her to come back and go back and forth, her mother wanted her back, and Hades said, well, eat 6 pomegranate seeds, please. So she did. So she can come up for 6 months, and she goes down for 6 months, and that's where the seasons come from. So the second day was eating of the pomegranate seeds and carrying of the sacred images, which included the masculine, the penises, coiled snakes, and presenting them to the snake goddess, and then menstruating on the fields themselves. And then the fast was broken. And this is kind of the interesting place, because when the fast is broken at sunset, they begin to laugh and cry and scream. This is quite cathartic, right? Sounds like we should do that every year. And go, and they would just say all the things that were forbidden and all the places that they were in pain and all the terrible things that happened, and rage and laugh and fight. And this was called the snake's tongue. They were just letting it out. They were just purifying themselves emotionally and cutting away their pride. Just let it go. Cutting away their pride and desire. And then, they would go into a very deep sleep, I can imagine. And day 3, they would wake up singing. They would be singing the ancient songs, singing the songs of the ritual. And the elders would speak of the snake's departure back into the world, back into the underworld, so that they plant, and they were planting the seeds, and they would sing and plant the seeds and fertilize the fields. And that was an incredibly important ritual for women. And then we also have the Eleusinian mysteries in Greek, where Demeter and Persephone, and you would go down, men and women both participated in this. You would go down into the cave and go to the phallus in the cave, the phallus in the womb. And the Villa of Mysteries, which what I spoke of before, is about Ariadne, and who's the wife of Dionysus. Dionysus is the god of ecstasy, the god of a mystical god, the god of madness. Ecstasy and madness can sometimes be close. I often, when I teach people to be candidates, I say, what's the difference between madness and transformative experience? What's the difference between madness and a mystical experience? Anybody know?
Madness doesn't end.
Madness doesn't end. Absolutely. You don't know what to do with it. You get lost in it. It's the same place. It's the collective unconscious. It's the spiritual archetypal realm of the unconscious. But we have the center to be able to go there and come back, to be able to work with the energies that we pick up there, to transform in ourselves. That's the difference. Thank you, Dan.
One other comment.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I believe it's Joseph Campbell who has this quote that I really like. That's the madman drowns in the same waters that the mystic swims in.
There you go. That's beautiful. The madman drowns in the same waters that the mystic swims in.
Isn't the key self-awareness?
What?
Isn't the key different self-awareness? When we're mad, we're not really aware of it.
Yeah, we've certainly lost the position of being able to witness, haven't we, in a way. I mean, you can go into tremendous altered states and not really know where you are. But, I mean, the first movie, the first scene, the first thing, she had to be in an altered state to do that. I mean, my God. she had to be in this incredibly powerful place, right?
And but, get grounded in her body.
Yeah, she had to be very grounded in her body. So is that what you're thinking of?
Yes, maybe I'm being oversimplistic, but somehow the way back seems to be through some sort of
When we go into altered states, whatever ritual happens to be, however we get there, we do we need a ritual to come back, right? That's why ritual can be so important. It can create the space that's safe. But we do have to learn how to go in and out. Shamans, they go into a spiritual crisis. They begin to maybe be physically ill or emotionally unable to do anything. and they're taken in and they have to find their way through. And that's how they learn to do what they do, by finding their way through. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's Ariadne, right, with the thread?
Yes, Ariadne has the thread. She has the labyrinth with the Minotaur. And
right.
She takes the thread in and helps Theseus go and kill the mad Minotaur. And then they come out. Yeah.
So just to connect, like how we have polarities there in dance, if you have, and when you say ritual, you talk about remembering something that's not here, so that's a polarity from what is.
Mm-hmm.
I think about like when you're swimming, you're breathing air right next to water, so you're in between the two worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So you have that dance of polarity of air and water.
Mm-hmm.
That if you can hold the two, then the third comes in and then you can be a mystic.
Right.
And I also think about Narnia, where they talk about the ring of the world between the worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So any world you're in, you also have access to the world that's between the worlds. And any world is not all of it. It's
mm-hmm.
just a world.
Right.
If you can remember that, you can come back.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. I was thinking about, let me think about when I was learning authentic movement,
mm-hmm.
Janet Adler, and this... both the sense of the witness, but I remember her saying something about an image of like imagining we were sort of tied to a tree
mm-hmm.
as we went down
mm-hmm.
and allowed our unconscious to move us.
Mm-hmm.
It always stayed with me.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the mystical without.
Yeah.
And staying grounded. There was like,
yes.
you know, tied to a tree.
Mm-hmm. So this is the imaginal realm, which is part of all this, and how we use it to travel into states of connection with different parts of our psyche,
mm-hmm.
right, and different parts of the world, and this, the erotic and the archetypal. Let's see. In the love goddess's cosmogony, erotic sensual energies were reconciled with reverent religiosity. Surrendering to sensual sexual desires was seen as a devotional path. A devotional path. Very different from our mindset, right? I mean, where do we find this? We don't. We have to find it personally. This is Artemis of Ephesus, many-breasted Artemis. She was the goddess of nature, of the wild animals. They all were in some ways, but that was her specific. But all the goddesses, Aphrodite, Artemis, Hestia, they were all virgin goddesses, meaning that they had sex with lots of other mortals and immortals and whatever, but they were never tainted. They were always one in themselves. They remained virginal. So they didn't lose themselves. That's a good trick to remember.
What do you mean by tainted?
They didn't become wives. They didn't become, you know, it didn't take them into a negative place. They always could retain their own sense
wives,
of self.
Wives, a negative place.
or husbands. You know, whatever we put on all that. Does that make sense?
Personal power.
They didn't lose their personal power. They didn't sell themselves to any particular way of being or what they should do or shouldn't do. They just remained true to their own nature.
Was pure
in that sense. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Do you think that that was the origin of the Virgin Mary?
The Virgin Mary goes way back, right? She's really the great mother. But she got.
But I was thinking in terms of you were saying that Artemis and Aphrodite were essentially, even though they had sex with mortals or whatever, but they were still virginal.
Yes.
And I was just wondering if you knew if that was sort
sure.
of one
sure.
of the.
Sure. All of these myths go way back. The Virgin Mary is the most recent patriarchal version of it. Okay. So this is. I love these pictures from the 1800s. You know, unfortunately, not many of them were painted by women because there weren't many women painters back then. And so, but this is Ariadne. This is the Ariadne before she wakes up, before Dionysus. She's abandoned on an island, and Dionysus comes and they have the sacred marriage and they wed. So this is Ariadne. Who's this?
Venus.
The birth of Venus.
Yeah.
I love this image of the birth of Venus, because there's all this beautiful flow and sensuality and around her. Let's see. So Aphrodite is the golden one, the moon goddess fertility. She's very ancient also. She's extremely ancient. And she wears the moon, the same moon as the crescent moon that Isis in Egypt wears. She's the honey, the dove, the Holy Ghost. All these goddesses are the Holy Spirit or the Holy Ghost. Isn't that interesting? I always liked the Holy Spirit. It was my favorite in that cosmology. Her birth is an act of love. When her mother and father, Uranus and Gaia, are merged and they're having babies, and Uranus won't let them out. So Cronus, one of the sons whose time, splits them, separates them, and cuts off his father's genitals and throws it in the sea. So that's the birth of Venus, from Uranus's genitals and the sea. Into the stormy sea. So she's clothed by the hours. Isn't that beautiful? She's clothed by the hours. And Afro means foam, and the last part of her word means scallop or feminine genitals. And her husband was Hephaestus, who was a blacksmith. It's very shamanic, very early shamanic. Blacksmith and a hunchback and deformed, and he would mine and create these gorgeous jewels and shields and for the gods from the mountain. And her son was Eros. So, a dream. This is a literature professor. She had the perfect persona, and she had crippling allergies. She could not go outside. And she had a tyrannical superego that was always telling her exactly what she should do and not. She was very controlling, and she had this dream. I'm sitting in an office writing my doctoral thesis. The building is surrounded by an exquisitely blooming garden. Suddenly, I became aware that a small statue of Aphrodite is waiting for me in the garden. I have never seen it before. I have a duty, an inner call to recover it. I must obey. Without caution, I descend to the garden, the forbidden zone. Heavily scented flowers and thick brushes, dainty, and among all this is the dainty statue. Instead of getting sick, I collect it calmly and carry it in. So in order to deal with her allergies and this horrible controlling aspect of her psyche, she needs to retrieve the Aphrodite from the garden. And then she dreamt, I'm teaching prostitution at the college. Okay, so there are a lot of... This is William Blake, Adam and Eve, but I love the angel with the serpent. There's the goddess again, the serpent. And the serpent was the goddess in the garden. What did the goddess want us to do in the garden? Know the difference between good and evil and get out of there. Stop being taken care of, to find our own will, to find our own journey, to find our own sense of self. I love this. Cupid and Eros. Eros and Psyche. I can tell you who did all these, but we'll talk about it right now. This is Lilith. Anybody know Lilith? Remember Lilith? So this is, we're getting into sort of, again, these goddesses are all very old. But Lilith was sort of more of a post-Greek myth, perhaps. And she was Adam's first wife. But she refused to be overshadowed by Adam. She refused to take the submissive position. And so she was banished from the garden. Well, she flew out of the garden, actually. And then God came and said, how dare you fly out of the garden? How dare you not be Adam's first wife? And she said, basically, too bad. And he cursed her. And she became a demon in Hebrew in the early rendition of her. And then in the Kabbalah in the 13th century, a lot of these early female goddesses were elevated back to their power and status. So she was a black goddess. So a lot of these were black goddess. Black is beautiful. Now, what does black mean in this context? Black means earth. Black means
the underworld.
The underworld.
Uh
huh.
Unconscious.
Instinct. Yeah, Laura.
Prima materia.
Prima materia. Right, prima materia. It's the material that we that gets transformed in the process, right? Anything else? Black.
I thought this was an image of Rishkaba.
This is an image that different people say a little bit different things about. I've always known it as Lilith.
Okay.
Yeah. But you know they're similar, right? They come from the same root. Yeah.
But just to note, as you're going through the different art images, the vulva seems to have disappeared.
Uh-huh, yeah.
The pelvis has become very vertical.
Right. Thank you. That's really important.
Noticing.
Mm-hmm. We can still see breasts.
Yeah.
They're fine.
Right.
But the vulva is receding.
Yeah.
The black goddess. Black is beautiful. She was the female who could pronounce the magic word, name of God, which was Verboten. So she had the power to pronounce the magic name of God. She has feet that are animal, and she has wings that are transcendent. She has the owls of wisdom. Lilu means underworld spirit, and Lil means light, which is very interesting. These polarities of light and dark in all of these figures. Okay, here's another 1800 painting of Lilith with the snake. She is sometimes thought of as the serpent herself, who helped Adam and Eve get out of the garden. Okay. I couldn't find really good images of the Shekinah or the Shulamite, which are more Hebrew images of these, that again go way back to the first century AD. Shakam means act of dwelling, the presence and the glory, an aspect of the deity that can be felt by the senses. The receiving element. One rabbi says she is the light generating all forms of life. She is the fiery aspect of God. She is the sexual imagery and light to show the ray which emerges out of nothing. She is the celestial mother out of whose womb the creative energies, the Sephiroth, spring forth. In the Shekinah, the Shulamite, and Sophia, all of them have this myth of being somehow they created the world with God. They are equal to God. They and God, you know, it's the feminine aspect of the Godhead. And they are all somehow fallen or come down to earth. And they are in every one of us. They are the sparks in our soul. But they kind of get lost, and they did get lost in religion and myth, didn't they? We lost them. And again, in the 13th century, there was this incredible connection in Spain in the 13th century between the Sufis and the Judaism and Christianity that was just amazing, and that's where some of this the feminine began to come back in the Kabbalah. Rabbi Shalom saying, we by the sexual act restore the deities to sacredness that was lost when Adam and Eve were exiled. So the Kabbalah restores her to the Holy Spirit. She's also the scintillae natura in alchemy, the little sparks in the darkness that we need to connect with. She's in the sacred marriage is the union of the soul with the Holy Spirit. In the Song of Songs, which was the Book of Wisdom, which was supposedly written by Solomon. You ravish my heart, my sister, my promised bride. You ravish my heart with a single one of your glances, with a single link of your necklace. What spells lie in your love, my sister, my bride? How delicious your love, more delicious than wine. How fragrant your perfumes, more fragrant than all spices. Your lips distilled wild honey. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the scent of your garments is like the scent of Babylon. So it goes, Song of Songs goes on and on and on with this very ancient sexual imagery. So, and then the Shulamite seems to be, it's that's where I am beautiful, I am black but beautiful. She's the female manifestation in life of the earthiness. And the Song of Songs, some rabbis feel, is the dialogue between the Shulamite and her lover, this dialogue that goes back and forth. Thou still abidest so entirely one that we may know thy blackness is a spark of light inaccessible. So, then...
Could you read that once more? The blackness is a spark of light inaccessible.
Thou shalt abidest so entirely one that we may know thy blackness is a spark of light inaccessible. So, you know, in a lot of mystical traditions, the most powerful place is the void. It's the blackness.
Yeah.
It's the darkness. And in that darkness is where we find the eternal light. And then we go on to Sophia. I like this image of Sophia because here we have the goddess, the ancient goddess, which is what she's connected to. So, again, she's the Holy Spirit. She's wisdom. Jung says about Sophia, she's the spirit of God. She is the feminine pneuman, the feminine spiritual energy. Her coexistence with Yahweh signifies the perpetual marriage from which the worlds are begotten and born. So you see, here we're getting a little bit away from the specific sexual imagery. It's more about giving birth and being the sexual partner, but through that, the birth. So it's interesting how these change as we go through the time. In the Nag Hammadi Library in the 4th century, which was found in the 1940s in Egypt, it was from the Alexandria Library, in the part Perfect Thunder, Perfect Mind, it says, "For I am the first and the last," this is the goddess, "the honored and the scorned one, the whore and the holy one, the wife and the virgin, the silence that is incomprehensible, the idea whose remembrance is frequent, the utterance of my name." Powerful. Right? This
and
is
also in that, by the way, a great image of the feminine in the sense it's very Taoist. It says, "I am below and they come up to me." It's a very feminine Taoist idea.
Yeah, I mean, all these goddesses, you know, they were heaven and the underworld. But we sort of kept the heaven part, but we lost the underworld part. And that was, if you look at a lot of Jungian work and Jung himself, we descend into the unconscious. We go down into nature. We go down into instincts. Okay. So this is another very interesting, this is a later image of Sophia. I just thought I'd throw that in. It's very powerful. Intense. She's not weak and wimpy. This is Mary Magdalene. Now, Mary Magdalene is an interesting figure, isn't she? I did a whole course on Mary Magdalene in Houston. She was actually Jesus is, from what we know from the sacred scriptures of the Gospel of Philip and the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, she was Jesus' favorite disciple. She really got it. The other disciples were jealous of her. They're like, they didn't have their mystical connection. And in the Gnostic Gospel of Philip, he says, "In the union of man and women dwells the relationship of Christ and the Magdalene, who it says was often kissed by him. And he was her most intimate." She was actually a very wealthy merchant. She was his patron, and she also preached. So back in the early church, women were equal, were preachers. Women were equal. There wasn't a separation. That happened later, of course. She spoke who knew the all. She spoke who knew the all. And she was labeled a prostitute by Pope Gregory in 591 when he gave a homily, and he insinuated that she had a lot of sin that was endemic to Adam and Eve. So that's how she became a prostitute. Let me read a...
It's so interesting because he was naming the truth that he had, you know, he did the classic...
Yeah, he did the classic...
Reverse it, you know.
Patriarchal thing.
Yeah.
This is a dream. It's a physician who had a strict Catholic upbringing. "There are four proselytes that approach my childhood home. They knock. Instead of a holy book,
They give us sex education texts. I'm startled, and I think sexuality is becoming a holy subject. Amazed, these illuminating books truly were eye-openers onto his spirituality, onto this woman's spirituality. And then we get, of course, we come back to the Virgin Mary, which is a very, very ancient time, over 20,000 years ago. She was a pregnant earth mother to begin with. Okay, any thoughts? Or should we take a little break? I have another movie and I have more material. Let's take a little bathroom break, okay? So make it, this is really hard. Make it really quick. It's impossible, but.
So how are you doing, Dan?
Yep. It's going to